Hi, this is Teresa Dietze and David Franco with Practical Work on Self. And this is our 27th group call. And this is the second question and answer period. So, welcome, everybody. It's great to have everybody here still and have such a strong group, even two classes after we finish with the book. That's exciting. So, David, anything to say? Besides that.
what keeps coming up for me is that this whole concept that we touched on a number of times and that truly runs through all 24 chapters of Practical Work on Self is the concept of practice. And as we talk about it, we're winding up and surveying the chapters and things like that. It becomes apparent to me that this idea of practice is essential to our work here. And that's always a topic that for me is a topic to go into. What we are talking about now is we're on the question and answer period. We finished going through all 24 chapters of Practical Work on Self. Now it's open to anybody in the class to ask whichever questions you'd like to ask about any of the material. So bringing up the idea of practice is just a way of putting one topic on the table to get us started, should we need that.
I have a comment while people are thinking about their questions a little bit and getting oriented here tonight. I was working today with the woman who, our ghost member, the toothbrush lady, one of our online people, and it's been quite interesting because she hasn't actually managed to listen to all of that many of the classes. But I've seen in her, when I've seen her in sessions, some significant changes. Now, she gave me permission to talk about this, or I wouldn't talk about it. And she brought it up today. And as we were working today, I noticed that she was doing Struggle of Sorcerers as good as I've ever seen it done. And this was not something she'd done before. She also went into spontaneously in working with her life issues. She went into I Can Do Anything and New Day Every Day energy. And what I noticed that I think is really important, and I mentioned this to her, is that when we do our work as a group and we do our work wish, and the toothbrush lady brought this up when we talked about it. She said, "Well, maybe this is work wish." And I said, "You're exactly right." What she meant and what I'm talking about is that the power and the energy of the group and the group mind and us doing our work and dedicating our inner work for the good of everybody everywhere, the first place that it shows up is the energetic support of all the members of the group. So here we have a group member who hasn't attended anything live. She's only heard a few of the classes, and yet showing up in her energy and her actions that I haven't seen in 10 years of working with her are all of these concepts in action that we've been working with in the class. And she felt very strongly, she thinks about the class all the time, and she felt very strongly that the influence of the class brought a lot of that about. So when we do our work wish, the first people that it impacts is the people close to us and the people who are connecting into this entity called the group. And then after that, it continues to spread out into the world. And I wanted to point that out because I think that's a really special thing, and we're all a part of it.
So let's take that topic. And the topic has come up a couple of times, and it does exist in some of the chapters. It's indicated the topic of group work and working with others. So is there a difference working as an individual versus working together as a group, and the various modes of which you might work together as a group? How does that work for you? How have you found that particular aspect, the group work, for yourself? Who's online?
Sin Hogg, Townsy Girl, Ginger Rogers. So far, if anyone else is up there, I haven't seen them yet.
Okay.
David T., I'll take a, I'll answer on that question.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I've really enjoyed the group work. I mean, both individual work and group work are special to me for different reasons. Obviously, the individual work is focused specifically on what I need, but I've really enjoyed this group, and I'm going to miss everybody in our period of absence. It is interesting to hear other people's knowledge, information, experiences, and more importantly, I feel supported in my own lessons and struggle hearing everybody else out there learning and working as well. Like, for me, I just feel more supported and I feel stronger when I'm near the group, even listening to a tape. Like, I feel a sense of support.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I've seen just amazing breakthroughs in everybody who has been in the class, and the responses that they've made and the growth that they've put on has been totally different growth of a different signature than their individual work has been with the people I've known for a long time and observed. Jenny, if you have anything to say about this, it'd be nice to hear from you. I've certainly seen shifts in you, and I don't know whether or not you source them at all to the group. If you don't, that's fine, but I'd be interested.
I was wondering about that because when I first started out the class, I wasn't participating live. I was listening to the recordings after the fact. And I don't know if it was because I started participating more with it over the phone that I ended up getting more out of it, or if it was just that at the beginning I offered all kinds of resistance to the class, and I'm curious if that's if other people felt that way too. I was resistant to the book, the whole thing.
Jenny, this is David.
Yeah.
I have resistance to the class and to the book.
Me too. We were just talking about this right before you got on the line, and David was comparing it. Go ahead and make your comparison again. David?
Yeah?
Make your comparison again so everyone can hear about the bathtub.
What I said was it's the same as getting a child to take a bath. You argue with them, you cajole them, however you can. It's so difficult. They resist. And then you finally get them into the bath, and then they don't want to get out.
Yeah. Yeah,
Teresa, I was wondering how it's been for you working in a group.
How it's been for me? Well, and we have some comments I'll catch up in a minute. Just want you guys to know I'm not ignoring you. I couldn't do the work on my own. I read the book, and I couldn't completely catalyze it for myself, and I started a practical work on self group with some friends some time back before this one in order to make certain that I kept my nose to the grindstone, or as Lee said, she said, keeping one on the straight and narrow. Sin Hogg said, easy to fool yourself on your own. And I just felt like I wasn't really able to dig in with as much earnestness and sincerity. There's a comment that I think is really important about that. For me, I'm more motivated by service to others than I am to do my inner work. However, when we do our inner work, it is service to others. And so in serving the group and being a moderator for the group, then that forces me to do my inner work for everybody. And so it has that element of work wish in it.
Okay. Did you want to read some comments?
From where?
I thought you were going to read comments from online.
I did already, actually. I wove them in because they fit with what I was saying.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, here's an interesting...
Can I just add a quick one? I just wanted to reiterate what I think it was Diana was saying about how much the group ended up helping because of hearing personal experiences. And I really feel like even though there's all these people out there that I've never met, I feel like they're friends. Mm-hmm. So I want to just thank everybody.
Okay. Here's an interesting comment about myself and group work. This last weekend, I'm located in Grass Valley, California. Grass Valley is where E.J. Gold lives, and there's a community here that works with his material called the Institute for the Development of the Harmonious Human Being. And this last weekend, there was a workshop that occurred here, and there were about 30 people, something like that here, and a number of the people who have been coming to equivalent workshops for 20 years or so. And I was asked to comment a little bit about the Wednesday night class, the practical work on self, and I remembered I had participated in and led the first practical work on self class 10 to 15 years ago. We did it online. It was using a different format altogether. And one of the people that were in that original class was attending. And we recalled at that time the practical work on self class was a 48-week class. We ran it 2 times. He then ran it 6 times after that. That's a total of 8 years. And I would drop in, but I wasn't moderating it at that time. So for some reason, and I understand I'm a very slow reader and all of that, but I keep coming back to it. Just like I keep coming back to The Human Biological Machine, which is the book we're going to be taking up next. So because there's a group, and because there's a group that has necessity, I'm compelled to come because of the inner work that's going on in the individuals and in myself. Every time we come to a chapter, it's brand new for me. It's a brand new moment that I get to see that particular aspect of my work, and the opportunity I have to share in front of you is quite interesting. And, you know, you've all heard me make certain comments about certain things that you've said. Some people are, that they're brand new. It's the first time they've come to the class. And I'll jump on a comment saying, emphasizing it and highlighting it, because I know it's coming from your being. And that spark is always fresh and new. So I'm thankful for the individuals that are here and offer an opportunity for me as well to learn the material yet again.
Okay, we have a few comments now. Silverdale said, group energy and dynamics enrich the personal efforts each makes on their own behalf. Townsend girl, I agree with the feeling of friendship, and it helps with the struggle through the language. Silverdale, one hand washes the other, that is, we can compare and contrast what we accomplish by ourselves with the efforts and attainments of others. And I said to Townsend girl, yes, a number of people had great resistance to the language and felt that the work was cold. The group warms the work up. And Townsend girl said, yes, certainly brings a richness to it. And Silverdale, in a sense, over the course of the past 27 sessions, we have gradually been knit into a single organism. That is, we are all individually parts of a whole. Townsend girl, part of learning how we are everything and separate at the same time. And Silverdale, the whole provides nourishment, enrichment, growth, and development to each of the parts. And vice versa, I'm adding.
And is that it for the
yep.
moment? I'd like to focus a little bit on what Silverdale is telling us about. Can you read his first comment again, please, of this last sharing?
I'm glad you qualified that. Group energy and dynamics enrich the personal efforts each makes on their own behalf.
Okay. No, then what's the next one?
One hand washes the other. That is, we can compare and contrast what we accomplish by ourselves with the efforts and attainments of others.
No, where he's talking about that the group over the 27 weeks...
In the course of the past 27 sessions...
Knitted together over the course... There you go. So over the course of these 27 weeks, something has occurred called the group is knitted together as a single organism. Does that make sense to anybody?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
So I'm saying that this is so real that even this person who's a part of our group who has never been with us directly, except for me, and has never read the book and has only read and listened to several of the chapters, is receiving these huge benefits in terms of having all of the other chapter work start to show up in her consciousness. I think that's staggering.
So part of what we're talking about as we go through these chapters, remember a long time ago we started talking about something called the essential self and the sleeping machine. We had no idea what that was. For weeks we struggled. How can we do it? And then as we come more toward the last several weeks, it's a term of trade, in a sense, that we use commonly. And we're beginning to sense and use something we call our sensing mechanism, which has become one of our tools. We're sensing our non-phenomenal self. We're sensing that, gosh, that's what it feels like in us. And what I'm proposing also is to sense the group dynamic and the specific energy that is called the group. That is there as well. And it is, its presence is just as real to me. Oddly enough, in a very certain way, as I scan, I, in a certain way, pick up individuals. There's a tone, but I pick up over than that as an umbrella, in a sense, the one body that is now that could be termed a single entity.
Mm-hmm. If I may, I have a question. It's regarding the theory or of the concept of the three centers. We have seen that we have three centers, the emotional, the intellectual, and the movement, and they seem to be working together, aren't they? One thought may trigger my emotions, and somehow it triggers something in my body, in my movement. Am I correct?
Yep.
So the three centers work in conjunction. I believe, or I have the feeling, that when working with a machine, we concentrate a lot in what is the movement center. Now, considering that the three centers work together, would I be right in to assume that if I modify one, the other ones will follow? If I attack one center, somehow I work in one center, the other ones will follow. If I change a posture, something will happen in my intellectual or emotional center. If I change one emotion, it will happen in the other two. Or if I affect it in the intellectual center, the other two will follow. Am I right?
I think you're right and not right at the same time. In my experience, some things will change and other things won't change. And it depends how resistant you are to working in. Like if you have a center that's sort of frozen because you have a lot of buffering around it and you're resistant to using that center, it could freeze out the effects that you would otherwise experience from the other centers. And at the same time, if you do a lot of work on the other centers, I think that it can have an impact that is cumulative over time, and it may slowly impact that center. So it really depends how integrated you are. If you're super integrated and you're not highly buffered, then I think that your centers will directly impact each other. But if you're highly buffered and you're not that integrated, then I think there can be a resistance to allowing the influence from one center to the next. That's my opinion. David and George, what's your opinion?
Well, did we have any exercises that highlighted any of the things that Guillermo is suggesting?
You know the answer to that.
To me? Yes, you. That's who.
Hey, I want to apologize. I don't know why I got knocked off the air a couple of times, and I've just spent the last 5 minutes in a black hole finally rejoining you.
We went totally silent waiting for you to return. Nothing has happened.
Well, I picked up a couple of words of Guillermo talking about the three centers, but then I got knocked off the air again. I got so frustrated. I was about to shut down altogether.
Oh, don't go there.
Oh no, of course not.
We can find you in the black hole.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, just a minute. Townsend girl, is that you on the 520 number?
That's me.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Calling from Arizona. Sorry.
No.
Real voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, real voice. It's a miracle.
It is a miracle. Have that strong Arizonian accent, though.
No. Canadian. Trust me.
Oh, that's what I meant.
I sensed that.
Oh, good. So, Guillermo, was your question answered?
Well, it makes sense what Teresa said. I didn't hear the other ones. Because the point that I was trying to make is because we have mentioned many times, you know, watch your posture, move this like that, dance this. So eventually it seems to me that if I am totally, I'm bad. I mean, doing a posture or something like that that will trigger something else, except for some obvious things that we discussed, that if I am just dropping a chair, you know, like an amoeba right there, obviously it's not going to trigger good thoughts it's going to be bad. That's a very obvious big example. But the subtleties, I'm very bad with the subtleties of my body to see, well, see how is your posture when you have this thought or this feeling. It's very tough to really make it trigger something in my moving center to make something occur or happens in my other two. My concept that I think I am on with that is that the three centers work together, and what happens in one, it may trigger the other ones.
So that Silverdale, just a second, Guillermo. Silverdale, what we're talking about here that you may have missed was Guillermo asked if he worked on his, on two of the centers, if the third center would kind of on its own change. And I said that it will really depend on how buffered he was versus how integrated he was, the extent to which the third center that was less used would be impacted by the other two. And we had solicited your opinion right before you disappeared.
Got it. And really, you know, look at all of these three are so intricately interwoven one with another that to change one is to automatically influence the other two. And then, of course, if you try to change two of them, the third one is going to inevitably be changed by the third, is going to inevitably, the third one is going to be inevitably changed as well. And then what we try to remember is there are two different efforts that are being made. One is what might be called the historical personality. We have to learn to think correctly. We have to develop some form of thought to guide our actions. We have to develop corresponding feelings that seem to correspond to the thoughts we have, and then we have to kind of develop certain body of habits that, again, reflects our new thinking or our new feelings or the efforts we're making in practical work on self. But all of those three centers relate only to the historical personality. In this practical work on self, we're actually trying to work with three centers which are reflected in one center, the historical personality, which has three centers, but also, more importantly, the non-phenomenal self, which is that electrical body within ourselves, which we perceive as a vibratory sensation. So as we try to adjust the faucet on our historical personality, the hope is that we will begin to become more familiar with this second center, our non-phenomenal self. And then once we have those two faucets working, then we blend them together to set off the third center, which is really a sense of unity in the midst of multiplicity and diversity.
And I think that if we shake up the normal habits of the historical personality, the sleeping machine,
yeah,
we shake up, for instance, by adopting a different physical mode or a different mood or a different thought pattern, all of which we've tried during the chapters here, it can shake loose a sensing of the non-phenomenal self.
Right.
Suddenly we might be able to see something in a different way. And gradually, that becomes part of our operations at that point.
And I will say that the whole definition of the word attention, you know, frequently we keep running across this word, our attention. What is our attention? Our attention, as Gurdjieff would point out, our attention is automatically divided by everything by the very act of living. Our objective is to try to organize our attention so that we consciously are able to focus on specific objects. So one object might be the thinking of our historical personality, or another part of our attention might be devoted to how does my historical personality generally feel in a lot of different situations, or how does my historical personality react in the midst of a given set of circumstances. And while part of my attention is being devoted to those three things, another half of the attention might be devoted to how is that non-phenomenal self of mine expressing itself while part of my attention is focused on these other three things. So that's the development of attention.
Right. And we had one exercise where part of our job was to keep a journal of the day as that day might be viewed through the body, the mind, and the emotions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and in doing that, you're in a sense, you're forced to see something in a totally different manner and beginning to sense this the non-phenomenal self and live there.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your thoughts.
Sure.
Other questions, considerations, curiosities?
And in that, following that example that you just gave, David, about that exercise of keeping the journal, I heard in the way that I did that, I just pick up a random moment of the day and I view it through the three centers.
Yep.
But I heard in the comments of the other participants, the other fellows, remember Teresa that we talked about, you too mentioned something, what I was going to say, that there are some centers that we don't work that much. And in that event that we were going to review, we tried to make an exercise through the day or something that exercise more a center that we don't work very much or that is not much developed.
Okay.
Right.
So that is my question. We can do it in two aspects. The exercise can be done in two aspects. One, just picking at random any event with no particularity and review whatever happened in the three centers. Otherwise, we provoke or we make emphasis in an event in which one of our centers is being underdeveloped.
Yes.
Meaning, remember that we talk that I said, well, how about the emotional center? So do we, I don't know if I'm explaining myself clearly here. Am I doing during the day, I will do an action in which I purposely involve my emotional center. So at the end of the day, at night, when I do my review, I do the review based on that. So I am provoking a particular event during the day that is going to work that undeveloped center.
Well,
and there's an intention here. There's an intention. One way
sure.
is just to pick up any event. There's any event at random. The other one is to provoke an event during the day in which you do that.
Using a center that you don't operate with for very much.
Exactly.
Yeah, two different exercises.
But it's the same.
Well, it would be toward the same end. Although it's one thing to just review for the basis of observation, and it's another thing to provoke, to begin to develop the skill in expressing through those centers. So I think that the first step might be merely to observe and get, not merely because observing is huge, and get the flavor of the center so that you know what you're working with and what you're working toward. And then after you have a good sense of it, if you wanted to add provoking it, as you say, that could be a good exercise in beginning to develop some influence of the non-phenomenal self.
Mm-hmm. So that would be that. By the way, the exercise for whatever the person that are listening is repairing the past.
Right.
Repairing the past. That is the exercise. So it can be done in both ways. So this is both aspects of the same exercise.
Sure.
Two different levels, let's say.
Yeah, and you know another way this was presented in Upensky's book In Search of the Miraculous, he's quoting Gurdjieff more or less, is that what we end up doing in self-observation is take a snapshot, right? We observe something about ourselves, we take a snapshot, and And then over a relatively long period of time, maybe several months of taking these so-called snapshots, suddenly they all kind of become a motion picture, and we kind of clearly see what our normal habit is in any given particular circumstance, because we've kind of been mentally clicking these photographs. Oh, I see. Every time I, whatever the personal thing, whatever the particular thing might be, you take, oh, I see. Every time I do this, I do that. And then all these so-called snapshots somehow become a motion picture of that particular habit. So that would be kind of,
cool, thanks.
That's a nice way to see it.
I forgot about that phrase, snapshots. But when you remind me that, we read that book a long time ago, but that snapshots, that's a good one.
Also, I'd like to remind everybody, speaking of versions, two versions of the same exercise, I have posted on the website now two different versions of tight chapter summaries with the exercises listed out in two different tables. And there's what amounts to a David weighted version and a Silverdale weighted version.
No.
They're not different. They're not weighted one way or the other. I mean, because you both have such totally different.
First, they're just two different versions.
Okay.
They're there for people to use if they'd like to use them.
Thank you. I particularly like.
And nobody made them, and nobody worked on them, and nobody did them. They just sort of appeared out of the ethers.
Yeah.
Guillermo, what did you say?
The second version for me was more clear. The other one, the first one, was a good one too, but it was more philosophical, let's say. The second version, I think the exercise was more described, more concrete.
Okay.
It helped me better the second one, I guess, for the clarity of the exercise, the second version.
Pardon me? David, what are you saying?
Just that there are tools there to use, and ultimately we come back to the chapter, and ultimately what we need to do is practice the various forms of work that are made available to us. For instance, the doorway exercise, it's how it's described, how it's explained. If the chapter was 30 pages longer, would do us no good if we didn't work on the exercise itself. And I recall various individuals right this moment describing their personal experience with the doorway exercise as more potent to me than any explanation that's been given. So the act of doing it brings it to another level altogether, brings it to another level. And that's what we aim for, is to actually do it. Watching somebody juggle, for instance, and being able to clearly explain it is a world apart from actually doing the process.
And for some people, the explanation of how to do it will distract, and they work better from the standpoint of investigating it as a mystery. So it really depends on the individual, what they're going to respond more to.
Well put. That's exactly well put. And I really appreciate that. So it's what we bring to the work. And maybe, for instance, this book itself, the book itself, Practical Work on Self by E.J. Gold, is it just simply an aid? It's a guidebook, isn't it? Because it's only when we're doing the work that some of the ideas become tangible to us. I mean, there are individuals on the phone right now and online who were very resistant to this material 26 weeks ago. And now they're enjoying it. There's nothing you can do. I mean, they weren't wrong then. but they did the work. That's the heavy lifting, and that's cool. And that work, as it's said in another one of the exercises, you're doing the work for the benefit of all beings everywhere. When you do that work and you successfully walk through the doorway in the manner in which you want to walk to it, and you sense yourself and you get through it, guess what? That actually isn't for you. It's for all of us. And that starts to create this group sense of one entity that is working together.
And it's cumulative. Cool. It's cumulative for the individual, and it's cumulative for the group, and it's cumulative for the planet.
And every victory that an individual has is a victory for the entire group. Cool. And every struggle that the brave individual is willing to share in front of all of us is beneficial to everyone. So
basically what you're saying is when you have the dichotomy, I guess you would say, of the book versus talking with David and T, it's almost like creating that dissonance that we've been trying to put within ourselves to sort of feel the essential self. And so as you guys are talking, this is sort of what I'm seeing is, you know, we do the sensing that we've been talking about, or we talk about creating the changing of the will and jolting the sleeping body to wake us up. And we're sort of doing that both, like you said, individualistically, but that's what you're talking about with the group, is creating that same dissonance and that same spark, if
yep.
you will. So that's kind of cool. But I did notice that the last couple weeks I've been wandering around sleeping and I think possibly glimmering awake, and it almost feels like the exercises are cascading, if that makes any sense.
Describe cascading.
Let's see. I'm getting up from my horrible cubicle, and I think, okay, now, remember, we're going to do the doorway exercise when we walk out of the door and when we walk in the elevator, and remember, we have to think about how we stand at the elevator, and so, you know, I think about that, and then sometimes I remember the doorway exercise if I'm not busy thinking about other exercises to try and remember to do. And then, the exercises become, I'm like, oh, you know, that's the dissonance thing. Oh, I'm listening to this other coworker be grumpy, and I'm going to try and do the whole pond thing and just let it part the ways and not get caught up in that. And
too many?
Not too many. A little bit. Like I'm juggling maybe one too many cleaning products that I'm ready for, but that I notice the presence continues.
So as you become... That's a very interesting point. As you become a more, as the hunt for the non-phenomenal self, the essential self, becomes more real for you, that dissonance between the exercises, in a sense, will diminish a bit. They're just there. I mean, all of it has to do with developing our attention in such a way that we have a vibrant, non-phenomenal self, that we are beginning to establish permanent being as an actual tool for us to live from. And it's gradually happening, and you go through bumps like that. That's a good one. It's good to observe that. That's excellent.
Did you ever try to take a tire off of the rim where you have to go around with the tire iron all the way around the rim in different places, and then eventually it pops off?
Yep.
The different exercises are like prying at the rim in different places.
Good. Good one.
Boy, that really makes sense.
So, Townsie Girl, I want to really acknowledge you for focusing so keenly on your work, where you're considering all of the different exercises and keeping them in mind like that. You're when people pry at the rim in more than one place at the same time, it's much more effective. You can do it by yourself with one hand and go around and around and eventually kind of get it. But when you pry in a couple of different locations at the same time, that thing pops off a lot faster.
Well, then I'm excited for the popping because this cascading thing is a little dizzying. But thank you.
Thank you. It's exciting to work with people who are really motivated like that.
I'd like to ask a question about the doorway exercise. This group effort, I feel like there's a lot of people out there who've been a lot more successful at it than I have, will rub off me. But my question or comment is, as I tried to do it, I felt as though it was simply an exercise of my mind more than my will, and almost a challenge to me if I could remember every time I walked through a door. And I didn't ever feel like I was sensing things or that my will was really being activated, other than that I was sort of trying to make something happen. And I gathered that other people were a lot more successful at it.
Wait. I have to interject on your behalf against the self-critical part of yourself. Haven't seen you today.
Well, now, today we have this great talk about portals, and if that's more the idea,
yes,
of leaving something old behind and then something new, well, then I'm excited to try it.
Not just that. That's a piece of it. But when we discussed portals today, you were all over the energy and right in it and engaged with it 100%, and you got it at a body level, at an emotional level, at a mental level, at a non-phenomenal level. You were firing on all cylinders there. And
so is that what I get to do every time I walk through from the hallway into the kitchen?
In a lesser way, we were talking about huge, enormous portals that can change your life. And these portals, they can change your life too, but it's like if you're filling up a bucket and you can fill it up drop by drop with all the smaller portals, or throw in a cup full of water from a bigger portal, or you can throw in a couple of gallons, or you can dump in a whole tanker, which is what we're talking about today. So every little bit that you do it is another amount of water in that bucket.
Does anybody else that's done the exercise have any helping comments here?
I do, and I don't mean to impose, but apparently I have words to say today.
We like hearing your words.
Was that Jenny who said that?
Yes.
Jenny, I wanted to point out, because I talk about the portal exercise or the doorway exercise a lot, sometimes, like the first time we started talking about it, I know that there were a couple times where I walked out through a door and I thought I was losing my mind because I felt like my body either expanded or shrunk. And I'm like, okay, it's 6 in the morning. Apparently I need more chai. And I didn't think it was real. And we talked about it and it felt encouraging. Sometimes I don't feel anything other than I become aware of how my body is moving through whatever doorway it happens to be. And other times I feel changes within, and other times I swear I feel that vibratory thing that Silverdale keeps talking about that I hope to achieve. So I think, like everything else, it's sort of a process. So sometimes you just are like, oh, okay, I'm exercising and I'm remembering the door, but I think David would say, and T would say, that that's an act of will itself because you're choosing to remember that door. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think...
Yeah, thank you.
To resonate with T, that you're not giving yourself enough credit and almost, dare I say, overthinking it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Just from a random perspective.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Overthinking the exercises is a... Guess what's happening when we're doing that?
Hello, yeah. Historical personality.
The exercise itself has been hijacked by the sleeping machine.
Well, because then you're busy trying to decide if you've done it right, and that's, from what I understand, a big part of staying asleep is judging.
It is staying asleep, and it's. I mean, dare I say, and I, you know, nobody, we don't want to offend each other, of course, but that's the ego. It's coming to make its mark. It's like a little dog spraying on its corner of its territory, saying, "Oh, I'll tell you how to do this one. I know." And suddenly,
yeah, I'm sure that's what I get it for.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
These are potent exercises, and you'll find your own signature on them. You'll see ones that work well for you, that are hauntingly important to you, and that you'll bring forth time and time again, and begin to share with others. Begin to share with others as tools that they could use, should they be interested in setting a foot or two on this path.
I have found it interesting to try and describe it. For instance, coming home and carpool going, "Oh, we have to hurry because I have to feed the horses before class." And they'll ask me, "Well, what's your class like?" We think about doorways and we think about vibratory cells and, you know, by now they're sort of looking at me like, "What?" But I think what I found was is as I'm trying to figure out ways to explain it to them, it's helping things clarify for me, too.
Yeah. It gives you a voice, doesn't it, to attempt to share. You're sharing something from one place of being into another realm. It is speaking a different language. So at that moment, you're actually a translator. You're a language translator, one language into a different language. It's an interesting role to play.
I wanted to, if I can segue, do we remember the exercise where we were supposed to pretend we can't read words?
Yes.
I don't remember its formal name.
Was that mentation?
That's right. Well, I really have a hard time with that because I've spent so much of my life actively reading. And just as an aha.
You couldn't read the chapter?
I could read the chapter. But as an aha, to a way to perceive, to look at signs differently, the buttons, and apparently I'm taken with elevators, the buttons in the elevator have Braille underneath them.
Yeah.
So if you go in the elevator and you close your eyes while you're wandering up and down floors, it's very interesting to feel the bumps and wonder, what does that mean? What number is that? Especially if you close your eyes first and you're not really sure what number your hand is near. So it really struck me today doing that, going, wow, that means something to someone, but it doesn't mean anything to me. But I thought that was kind of close to what we were aiming for.
Yeah.
It's a nice image.
You're in abeyance, right? You're in suspension at that moment. That's thinking by form, by the way, is that chapter.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and so suddenly you were in Never Never Land. What does that mean? Why isn't there a 13th floor?
So Silverdale said, once taught, twice learned. When we're teaching others, you're learning yourself. That's one reason I've enjoyed participating in this workshop. I'd like to say that we're coming up on the end of the hour, and I wonder if we'd like to do a tape change at this point. before we get into a topic and end up having to interrupt it?
Marvette's not here at the moment. Pretty soon, yeah. A couple minutes.
So I'm going to now, while we have this big pause and we're thinking about it, and